What's the story behind Invisible Cinema? Are you a film buff?
I like film, and I like stories that leave room for the imagination to fill in the details. So I wanted this thing that the song titles all have a story that each person who listens to it can interpret in their own way and fill in with visuals if they want, but I wouldn't ever spell out exactly what the story is that I had in mind. I want to leave it open for them to figure out.
And we'll start with Peaceful Warrior, which, as I saw earlier, was originally called Illumination?
It was originally called Peaceful Warrior, and then I changed the title about five times. And when I went into the studio to record the album, I had settled on Illumination. But the guys in the band told me that there was no way I could change it from Peaceful Warrior because they all had images in their mind of, like, samurai rushing down a hill. And they were so attached to that song title that they convinced me that I needed to keep it.
But this is a peaceful warrior, so is it a samurai with like a daisy or something?
There you go. That's about right, you know. They're rushing down a hill to like give them a hug or something. I don't know.
It's Peaceful Warrior with Aaron Parks and his quartet.
Thank you.
I understand that you were originally taught to play the piano, but not to sight read, not to read music.
Yeah.
Tell me exactly what happened.
Well, I was playing piano around the house. My family had a piano at home, and I basically just went onto it one day and started trying to mimic the sounds of the Pacific Northwest thunderstorms. And I was trying to create the sound of rain, of thunder, of wind, all sorts of different elements. And I just was trying to create sound effects, basically, even though I didn't know what I was doing at all on the instrument. So I think my parents got tired of me making that racket, so they suggested that I take piano lessons. I was fortunate enough to start studying with a teacher who just taught me to play by ear. Rather than putting music in front of me, she'd show me how to play things. She'd have, like, just show me the way to play things on the piano. And she taught me the song In the Mood, Glenn Miller. It's a good place to start.
Sure.
And I learned that song. That was, like, the only thing I knew how to play. And I heard about a big band, like a big band for young kids. And I sent in an audition tape with In the Mood on it, which is the only song I could play. And I got in. And sort of the rest is, I don't know what it is. It's something. I was going to say it's history, but I don't even know what history means. So,
you've always been someone who sort of acts on your own pace.
Yeah, musically, I like what I like. And so I write music that reflects that, brings in those influences. And as long as it makes me happy and as long as it's fun to play, the other guys are enjoying themselves and hopefully the audience is enjoying it. That's all that matters, you know?
Do you ever feel like there's barriers?
Nothing that can't be overcome with some creative thinking.
Tell me about your experience with Terrence Blanchard, because I sometimes think that Terrence is essentially the Art Blakey of our time. You know, he's very much the Terrence Blanchard of our time, for sure.
For sure, and I'd say the Art Blakey of our time is a good way to put it as well. He takes young musicians under his wing and gives them freedom to do what they do. He let everybody play the way that they wanted to play. He didn't try to dictate too much to them. And just that sort of free rein to try things out and fall on your face is invaluable. That was like the real school for me, you know. I finished college at 18, but the real school started right after that in his band, just the school of the road. So,
and you were, when you say the road, I mean, you guys were playing internationally. So
yeah, we were playing a lot. And I was in that band for 5 years with mostly the same members, you know, a pretty core nucleus. So
at 18, you're already a person who's wide open to experience, and even more so, I think, you know, the younger you are. What was it like traveling to all of these destinations? You'd never been to many of these places, I'm assuming.
Well, I hadn't been to a lot of them in that kind of capacity. I was very fortunate that when I was young, my parents, my dad ended up with a lot of frequent flyer miles from his job, and so we would take family vacations to all sorts of different places in the world, which I think was a really integral part of the way that I grew up. I experienced all sorts of different cultures and just saw that basically no matter where you go, people are really mostly after the same things, you know, and I grew up without a fear of foreign cultures, which is, I mean, that's a big part of who I am, I think. And I give thanks for them raising me that way.
I sometimes think that jazz, if there is a music, is one of the musics that is not afraid of foreign cultures. It is an aggregator of sorts.
Without a doubt.
What have you aggregated in your music?
Everything I've ever heard, I'd probably say.
You take bits from each?
I take bits from a lot of different things. You know, my taste is very, very eclectic. I love ambient music. I love classical music. I love indie rock. I love hip hop. I love just straight up folk music from different countries. I love African drumming. I've got just tons of stuff that I'm always listening to and letting it sort of subconsciously influence me, rather than specifically trying to rip things off. I'll just sort of let everything in and listen to it as carefully as I can, and then do, and then just do what I do and see what comes out and is inside of it. So,
Nemesis. Sounds frightening.
It's a little. It's big and bad. It's a big bad wolf kind of.
It's big and bad, but it's cyclical. It's what it sounds like to me. It just kind of keeps like.
It keeps on going. It's a juggernaut.
It's menacing sometimes.
It's definitely menacing. It's a. That's a song that I originally wrote for Kurt Rosenwinkel to play, and the way that I put it is, whenever he plays that, we play that song in his band. Whenever he plays that song, he digs into the melody like a dog that just got a big juicy piece of meat, and he's just like grrr, shaking his head back and forth. That's maybe a really disturbing image, but that's what it always. Whenever he plays it, it always feels like that. And then Mike sounds great on it as well. You know, he just finds his own thing and brings it out. So that's a nasty little song there.
Nemesis from the Aaron Parks Quartet. Thank you. I found myself beginning as someone who listened to records or listened to complete albums, and as the technology has progressed, I find myself listening to more like single selections.
It's true. It is a sad thing in a way. It works both ways. It's really great to actually be able to listen to an album from start to finish and have it work. The thing is that these days, not many people make those kind of albums. It's like you can listen to the first four tracks, maybe, and then the last track, if you're lucky. Those are the ones. And everything else is kind of filler. For one thing, I think that's because albums are too long these days. They have the 74-minute thing, and they cram them up with so much music that you can't just sit down and have an experience of listening to that. I don't think anybody can listen to... I mean, some people can, but that's a long investment of time.
It's one of the things that I noticed on Invisible Cinema, Aaron, is that you have more than a couple of songs that, I mean, you could record them onto 45s, you know, I mean, they're under 3 minutes long.
Right.
You know, it's like disc jockey tunes.
Totally. I really wanted to do that. I mean, that's part of the idea of Invisible Cinema. It's not all about being a jazz record. It's about creating sonic environments some of the time and animating a specific scene.
And these are things that you get from listening to, say, Aphex Twin or...
Sure, exactly. Aphex Twin, definitely. I mean, Brian Eno less so. Those songs are sometimes really long. But I've been listening to a lot of Brian Eno these days. Just everything just sort of comes together and all sort of... I don't know. I've got a lot of it just from... realizing that the songs that I really like a lot of times that really impact me, the non-jazz songs, are really, really short. And I was like, why can't you do that in instrumental music? Why does every song need to be 15 minutes long, you know? Sometimes they'll stretch out on the course in a live gig, but on a record, I think it's a different thing. And I like shaping just these little bite-sized pieces some of the time.
Do you think... not necessarily about making a hit, but about making one of those condensed statements. I mean, are you thinking in that way?
Some of the time, yeah. Not about a hit, but the thing that I really like to do, I make tons and tons of mixtapes. Very, very eclectic mixtapes where, like, the order is all really carefully thought out. It has a lot of different music from different genres. And there's not a lot of jazz that you can put on those mixtapes, I've found, and have it work. There's a Brian Blade Fellowship you can put on a mixtape. Kurt Rosenwinkel you can put on a mixtape. There's a few other artists, like, of our time. And so I wanted to put a couple of songs on my record that somebody else would be able to put into that kind of mixtape kind of thing and have it work, not be like a 9-minute song that's breaking the flow.
Well, I'll be interested in getting one of those mixtapes at some point.
Yeah, I'll make some.
That'd be
great. Make some for you.
Do you practice yoga?
I do. Not regularly enough, but I'm a beginner.
I asked that because as I was watching you play one of the songs here in the studio, I thought to myself, you know, if there were a piano teacher, they would probably be saying that your posture is nightmarish or something. You know?
I'm working on that right now. I have a really great piano teacher, Sophia Rozoff, and I need to see her more because she helps my posture get better. Right now it's a little bit out of whack and trying to get that under control. So,
but it seems to work for you as in terms of what you're playing. I mean, you know, the movement of your body in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing is that the whole body plays the piano, not just your hands, not just your brain. You know, like all of you, it needs to be invested. She talks a lot about the connection with your feet to the ground being important to getting your piano sound right. And to many people, that sounds really strange, but I think it's incredibly important. You know, you got to play the piano with your whole body.
Finally, there's Harvesting Dance.
Yes, there is. That's the song which is very, very elemental to me. It's a seasonal sort of song, and very ritualistic and it has a lot of influences from, parts of it are definitely influenced by John Zorn. Other parts of it, like John Zorn's Masada group, other parts of it are really, really influenced by Alvaro Pärt. I basically took a chord progression from Fratres and built it into like this gigantic rock anthem kind of section, which was an odd thing to do, but seemed right. And
whatever works.
Yeah, whatever works.
So I sometimes think that's the greatest thing about jazz is, you know, you have the ability to go anywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just a matter of, do you want to?
Absolutely.
Aaron Parks. The quartet is Aaron Parks on piano, Matt Penman is the bassist, Mike Moreno is on guitar, and Eric Harlan is behind the drums. Our mix today was by David Tallickson, assisted by Josh Webb. I'm Josh Jackson from WBGO.